Parents of tweens, if you're familiar with far-off drop-offs...
Dad, stop, right here.
Or get DMs about what's for dinner, you may be experiencing tween milestones. For your son or daughter, these can start at age 9. HPV vaccination, a type of cancer prevention against certain HPV-related cancers, can start then too.
For most, HPV clears on its own. But for those who don't clear the virus, it can cause certain cancers later in life.
Embrace this phase. Help protect them in the next.
Ask their doctor today about HPV vaccination. Brought to you by Merck.
Welcome back to Listen to Your Heart. I'm Jerry.
And I'm Jerry's Heart.
Today's topic, Repatha, evolocumab. Heart, why'd you pick this one?
Well, Jerry, for people who have had a heart attack, like us, diet and exercise might not be enough to lower the risk of another one.
Okay.
To help know if we're at risk, we should be getting our LDL-C, our bad cholesterol, checked, and talking to our doctor.
I'm listening.
And if it's still too high, Repatha can be added to a statin to lower our LDL-C and our heart attack risk.
Guess it's time to ask about Repatha.
Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Serious allergic reactions can occur. Get medical help right away if you have trouble breathing or swallowing, swelling of the face, lips, tongue, throat, or arms. Common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar, and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site.
Listen to your heart.
Ask your doctor about Repatha. Learn more at Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Almost 100 days into the Donald Trump presidency, and we've been recounting the many seemingly outrageous happenings stateside, from Trump's Riviera in Gaza to cutting of federal agencies to withdrawing of funding from Harvard and other universities. Now, while we might think that what is happening is mad, is that really the case stateside, with the seeming indifference of some in America? But just have a listen to this.
Martin Niemöller was a German clergyman, a Protestant, who watched Hitler's rise to power as though he were a member of the audience. In 1944, as a prisoner in the Nazi death camp at Dachau, he wrote the following. In Germany, they came first for the communists. And I didn't speak up because I wasn't a communist. Then they came for the Jews. And I didn't speak up because I wasn't a Jew. Then they came for the trade unionists. And I didn't speak up because I wasn't a trade unionist. Then they came for the Catholics. And I didn't speak up because I was a Protestant. Then they came for me. And by that time, nobody was left to speak up.
That's a reading of a poem by Pastor Martin Niemöller, who was initially an anti-Semitic Nazi supporter, but he later spoke out against Nazi control of churches and was imprisoned in a concentration camp where his views changed. And after the war, he expressed regret for his previously held views. So is that awakening likely to happen in the United States as we in Europe look dismayed at what is going on in the Trump presidency? Well, I'm joined by Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with the journal.ie, recently returned from the United States. Larry, good morning.
Good morning, Pat.
Are we getting it wrong here?
Well, I don't know if you're getting it wrong. I think objectively you're probably getting it right, in the sense that Donald Trump has proven to be more extreme. He's moved a lot faster. He's moved a lot harder. He's moved more efficaciously from his point of view this time around. So I think the coverage, you know, is unassailable in the sense of his authoritarian impulses and other things. But what I would say, and this is based on my trip there and based on polling data as well, is that if you look at the polling data, for instance, on Donald Trump's approval rating, the median now is, or sorry, the aggregate polling shows that he is on 46.1%, which is down just a little over 3% from what he got in November. And when you couple that with the fact that polling also shows that just 2% of the Trump voters would back another candidate, it seems to me likely that in a showdown with Kamala Harris, certainly if there were a hypothetical rematch, that Donald Trump would be in reasonably good position, because some of the people who don't approve of Donald Trump and what he's done, who think he's gone too far, would still, in a contest against somebody like Kamala Harris, opt for Donald Trump as the least bad option. And what I would say is, my experience, and again, I'm not speaking by any stretch for all Americans, I'm speaking to what I encountered and what the polling is showing, the Americans who decide elections, not the activists who are out there courageously protesting the street, not the Trumpists, but the people who can be gotten, the gettable voters, and where they're at. And certainly they haven't moved against Trump to the extent that one would think in Europe. And it reveals to me a real dissonance between the thinking of Western Europe and the United States.
And yet, when we look at the coverage of the town halls, which have gone very badly for Republicans being challenged by their own people, when you see interviews with a farmer, for example, whose income was cut in half when the federal government cut the purchase of honey from his farm to give to school children who, you know, would be need to be nourished. All of those things, and Medicaid and Medicare, people, threats to those, costs of medicines going up, and of course what's happening in Walmart or Target or wherever else to the cost of essentials. Surely that's eventually got to have an impact.
Well, there you say it. I mean, I'm speaking in the here and now. What you say in particular about those negative economic consequences that surely will be visited upon people to varying extents, those will, or at least they should, have a serious impact on Trump's favorability and in turn of Republicans. And there is a sense out there, Pat, that Trump is aware of that. I heard you speaking to the Chinese ambassador earlier, and a lot of Trump's softer talk emerged after he had meetings with the CEOs of Walmart and various other organizations.
Yeah, Target, Walmart. There were four CEOs who are on the high street, on the main street, selling stuff to ordinary Americans.
Exactly. And that I think that was pivotal in his change in rhetoric. And I also think that behind closed doors, whatever is being said publicly, Republicans know that with midterms just around the corner, this could be a real problem for them. And there will be political pressure brought to bear on that front. A related question, and I suppose it aligns with the chilling audio we heard earlier, is the extent to which Trump is all that concerned about the fate of congressional Republicans.
Now, the question of when will Republicans stand up? I mean, we saw, was it Senator Murkowski from Alaska saying she was afraid? And many Republicans are afraid, not necessarily for their own lives, but for their own seats, that if they oppose Trump, that you'll get the likes of Elon Musk opening up his wallet again and backing somebody else.
Yeah, and this is when I talk about the dissonance in thinking between people in the United States and people here, people immediately hear Barbara Murkowski and they think that she's talking about a threat to her life. And maybe there might be some crazy person out there who might do something, and that's horrendous to even contemplate. But I think what a lot of Republicans are speaking to is the fact that they know where the grassroots conservatives are. The grassroots conservatives are very much in Donald Trump's corner. There is a narrative, I think, especially outside the United States, that sensible Republicans surely will come back and save the Republican Party. Well, I'd say two things. Number one, so-called sensible Republicans are almost an extinct species. Second of all—
But they can't be. I mean, as representatives, yes. But as people, there have got to be people who are looking at what's going on and looking at the Constitution, looking at the subversion of justice and judges being publicly criticized for their decisions being ignored. They've got to think that someday that could be me. I could be on the wrong side of a decision made by a partisan judge.
They've got to think. That's what you're saying. You say they've got to think. And, thinking logically, I would agree with that. But if you look at the polling data, again, it suggests that in the 80s of ordinary Republicans have a very favorable point of view as Donald Trump does. And it's something we've discussed a number of times, Pat, is that the reality is the thinking of grassroots conservatives does not align with traditional Republican philosophy. It is not real conservatism. It is turn back the clock conservatism. It is America is broken and we've had enough type of conservatism. And even despite all the radical things that Trump has done, they still remain in his corner. Now, the question becomes, as you said, is the buck, the almighty buck. And if they take a real hit in their pockets, will that be enough to switch the dial?
Now, the question of his administration, it's made up of a very odd bunch of people with many of them underqualified for the jobs they've been given. How quickly do you think we will see falls from grace?
Yeah, it's a very good question. I think Trump, because of the amount of personnel changes in his first administration, I think there's a reluctance there. I think especially as his numbers decline, I think that if he were to move people and fire people, that it would almost give rise to a claim that Trump is desperate and that would be the new narrative. I think certainly Pete Hegseth has disqualified himself, in my view. He never should have been appointed to the position he holds as Secretary of Defense.
He's also, his interviews subsequent to the second revelation have been virtually hysterical.
Yeah, and he's clearly not qualified for the post. But that having been said, Trump at least publicly continues to voice confidence in him. We're hearing different rumblings in the media, but he continues to voice confidence in him. So again, we knew this going in, Pat, that the only qualification for being in the Trump inner circle at this stage is that you will never question Donald Trump, and Hegseth fits the bill.
Now, Elon Musk, he is running out of time anyway, because after a certain number of days, he'd have to become an employee and would be subject to security scrutiny, which he would probably pass under the Trump administration, but certainly under any other, he would fail in terms of drug use and all the rest of it and kookiness generally. You know, could you rely on someone who's advertising for women to have his babies online? There's all sorts of stuff going on. So he will go.
Yeah, I mean, he's signaled very clearly that he's going to return to Tesla on a more active basis. And certainly Tesla has had some serious financial damage since Donald Trump became president. In a strange way, politically speaking, that mightn't be a plus for the Democrats because, again, were I advising Democrats, I would be hammering away at Elon Musk even more than I'd hammer away at Donald Trump, because there's a big narrative out there that says that even for Trump people, we voted for Trump. We didn't vote for this unelected weirdo billionaire to make decisions. And again, a lot of the decisions he's making are hurting the lower income, the people who are struggling, who still went along with Trump. So Musk has been a very good bogeyman for the Democrats.
It's interesting that Musk going back to Tesla may not be good for Tesla, because he's done his own brand, his personal brand, such damage by his behavior, and then he's transferring that back in spades to Tesla. The other interesting thing about Tesla is that their profits were way down, 71% down, but they would have been completely underwater if it weren't for the carbon credits they're selling to other motor manufacturers under a scheme, I think, instituted by Biden, but which will lapse because Trump wants to get rid of it. So the next quarter for Tesla could be even worse.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, we're in the realm of hypothesizing here, but one wonders about the future of the still supposedly rosy relationship between Donald Trump and Elon Musk. If Musk continues to suffer financially, and if the perception that Musk has been a drag down on Donald Trump continues.
Now, the whole thing of what America is, what America stands for, you seem to be suggesting that the Republicans, by and large, don't actually care as long as their bellies are full and their wallets are loaded. But this is Tim Walz, of course, was the running mate of Kamala Harris, speaking last night about the current state of the United States.
In this land of the free and home of the brave, we have university students being swept up, shoved into unmarked vans, and fathers being tossed into Salvadorian gulags without a hint of due process. So I want to be real clear about this. If you say you love freedom, but you don't believe freedom is for everybody, then the thing you love isn't freedom, it's privilege.
Now, that's a point we would all go along with, but how would that play with they were Democrats in the audience, but Republicans, they say, to hell with it. I'm okay. I'm all right, Jack.
Well, we can look at Mr. Abrego Garcia, and despite the fact that there was a flagrant violation of the rule of law, an ongoing flagrant violation of the rule of law, a mistake admitted, a violation of a deportation order that had a stay put on it. Despite all of that, we've seen the right wing quite effectively tar Mr. Abrego Garcia as somebody who needs to be deported.
And one of the most outrageous things was he's not a terrorist, okay, but he could be.
Yeah.
And this kind of talk.
And look, the point is, and I keep saying this, Pat, is I don't think he's a saint, but that's wholly immaterial. The fact is, what is happening is in blatant violation of a court order. And if we don't have the rule of law in the United States, we have nothing. And the fact that the party that always was the party of law and order is ready to stand by and countenance this stuff is really appalling. That having been said, the reality is where the American people are now when it comes to immigration, for instance. So when I was in the United States, what was the one issue that Democrats went to the wall for? It was against the idea that you should have to prove citizenship before you vote. Something that's pretty common sense, if you ask me. Democrats instead came up with every excuse in the book as to why that was unreasonable, flying in the face of what more than 80% of the American public believe, such that only four Democrats in the House of Representatives said that we believe that you should have to produce identity of citizenship.
Which is nonsense, of course.
It's an absolute nonsense. And this is my point, Pat, is that
But was there some sort of method in their thinking, which was that a lot of the people who have a right to vote don't have the kind of ID that would be, except they simply don't have a document that says I am a citizen of the United States.
But the problem from, again, I'm not saying anything new. Politics is a numbers game. And 83% of the American people think that this is a reasonable request. Democrats flying in the face of that have handed Republicans a very useful tool ahead of midterm elections who can run ads saying your Democratic member of Congress doesn't believe that someone should have to establish proof of citizenship before they exercise the sacred right to vote. It is foolish politics. And this is what makes me wonder, the strategic ineptitude of the Democrats when they should be well situated to stop this stuff, to put a curb on Donald Trump, will they be able to do so?
The question is, who leads the Democrats now? I mean, Chuck Schumer's getting on. His number two is retiring now. Cory Booker made that great lengthy speech, which got him attention. But who is the leader?
It's a very important question. And one of the problems, I think, is that at least if you look within the United States House of Representatives, Hakeem Jeffries, who I like a lot, I have a lot of respect for, I'm not sure he's the national leader of the Democratic Party. And I think all Democrats, to an extent, those with ambitions on 2028, they're waiting to see how 2026 plays out before they take their stance and position themselves accordingly. But that having been said, there are Democrats, people like Wes Moore, the African-American governor of Maryland, people again like Gretchen Whitmer, people like Gavin Newsom. There are capable people, Andy Beshear, who I have a lot of time for, who's the governor of Kentucky, a blue state, but a Democrat. People like that who need to step forward. We know Pete Buttigieg has done a good job as a spokesperson. But more so than individuals, what Democrats need to do is identify a coherent set of policies and get off the idea of prioritizing what Scott Jennings, the conservative commentator on CNN, calls 80-20 issues. Where the American people see Democrats right now, our party, the champions, issues where they are vastly out of sway, out of tune with the American people. Instead, what Democrats should be doing is, working class people, you voted for Donald Trump. What the hell has he done for you? Not a damn thing. Not a damn thing. And how long are you going to let this go on for? And one of the points I keep making is Trump is waging a war on colleges and universities for DEI. If I were Democrats, I'd be waging a different sort of war on colleges and universities, and it would be this. When we get back into power, we are going to do everything we can to force you to cut tuitions, which make class mobility and everything else in the United States impossible. Why can the rest of the Western world educate to third level its people at an affordable cost and the United States can't? We're better than that, and that's the messaging they should be focused on.
In all of this, and we're talking about the might of China and the might of the United States still has the biggest economy in the world. Disproportionate spending on the military, perhaps, instead of on health, on education, on the very basic things that many countries in Europe absolutely take for granted.
Absolutely. And when Democrats focus in on those basics, the bread and butter stuff that people focus in on the kitchen table that dominate conversation, Democrats can win. It's when they get caught out in the 80-20 stuff, Trump and the Republicans smile and laugh all the way to the ballot box.
So stop being woke. Go to sleep again.
I'm not saying stop being woke. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying you need to prioritize and you need to develop a coherent package.
Larry Donnelly, law lecturer at the University of Galway and columnist with thejournal.ie. Thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.